Hello, everyone. This is Frank Riker.
And this is Darren Sands.
And this is part two of Cool Cruel Summers 1985. No key moments here except for one, because we already did in the beginning, but I want to say this. We do have a key moment that just happened recently. It's because Darren didn't like Goonies, Richard Donner died.
I felt bad for hating on that film. You know, we literally put that podcast out half an hour before the guy died, and everybody was surprised that I hate Goonies, and then I just felt so bad because I just tore it apart. I'm still not a fan, and I won't be watching it in memory of Richard Donner. I shall watch Superman or The Omen instead.
You killed Richard Donner.
It sounds like I did, but
remember this day, folks. Key moment in history.
Yeah,
Darren killed Richard Donner.
Terrible news. But, you know, there was people like, comments were like, gone too soon and things like that.
That fucker was 91.
It was 91.
And what was the official, it was natural causes, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think he just was old.
Yeah, it's like we all should be lucky to be that old. Everyone was talking about him, and he was trying to do Lethal Weapon 5, and we're just like, he's 91.
Yeah,
wheel him in.
Okay. Exactly. But there is one other thing that I wanted to mention as well, and this was courtesy of our friend Colin Murdy, who posted on Facebook today. So where are we now? We're on the 10th of July, this Saturday. And apparently 40 years ago today, Escape from New York was released.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's something to celebrate, I guess. A film that I can never tire of watching. One of my favorites.
Happy 40th birthday.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we with this?
So right now we're starting at July 3rd. So over here in the U.S., it's the day before, you know, the big Independence Day weekend. And we're going to go back in time. Specifically back in time to have sex with our mother. And that's going to be the definition probably of 80s culture is Back to the Future.
Steven Spielberg and Robert Zemeckis bring you Back to the Magic.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Back to the Fantastic.
It works!
Back to the Action.
Whoa, this is heavy.
Back to the Past.
It's an absolute dream.
Can't grip on yourself.
Back to the Future. Michael J. Fox. Christopher Lloyd. In Back to the Future. Rated PG. Sneak preview tonight. Check newspapers.
Now, Darren, I'm a big fan of Back to the Future. Probably the whole trilogy. I think the first one, the second one, and third one all go in order of what I like. The first one, of course, is the best.
Yeah, I think you're right. The first one definitely is the best. It's a terrific movie. The second one, technically, I think is better because continuity wise, with all that stuff, having the first Back to the Future film in the background as they're, you know, going back in time for a second time, it must have been an absolute nightmare to kind of recreate those sets because the sequels were, you know, like 4 years after or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not only recreate those sets, recreate those scenes playing out in the background, looking identical, and obviously with, in some cases, different actors as well. But the original, it's just a terrific classic 80s movie, one that stands the test of time because it never dates, because it's set in that era. Everything in the 50s, it just looks, it's just timeless to me.
Including the DeLorean, right? What says 80s automobile than the DeLorean?
The great car. It's a shame that the whole thing went tits up not so long after.
Yeah. But we all know that Eric Stoltz was the original Marty McFly.
Mm.
You know, and it's hard for a production, and it must be, you would know better than me, to stop halfway through a recast and do the scenes over again. It must be really hard.
It must have been a nightmare. I think it was 6 weeks, wasn't it? They shot
Jesus.
6 weeks of...
He's in it, though.
He is in a couple of shots, isn't he?
Yep.
I think he's like his arm and the back of his head or something like that. But yeah, they shot with him for 6 weeks. Yeah, after 6 weeks of filming, Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale felt that Stoltz wasn't right for the part, and Stoltz agreed.
Yeah.
So yeah, so paid. He did, yeah, yeah. But they brought in Michael J. Fox, who could only work. He averaged around about 5 hours sleep throughout the production of Back to the Future, because the bulk of the production was filmed from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.
And then go to do the TV show.
Yeah, over the weekend, that was. And then the TV show he was doing during the week. So the guy must have been absolutely knackered by the end of that shoot.
Do you think, now, Christopher Lloyd, do you think he's the perfect Doc Brown? And the way he acts and everything. Is.
Reverend Jim, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, in Taxi and everything. Do you know who were some of the characters, I mean, some of the actors that were considered to play Doc Brown?
I don't actually know. Go on. Thrill me.
Okay. John Lithgow, who I could see.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice.
Dudley Moore.
Mm.
And this is the one I thought would have been, you know, the cream on top right here. Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, that's not a bad choice.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's gone on to play lots of other mad scientists after that, hasn't he? So the one thing that really amazes me about it is, well, obviously we talked about the Eric Stoltz thing and bringing in Michael J. Fox. That added $3 million to the budget to kind of reshoot all that stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
The film was so delayed that when it wrapped, it was released exactly 9 weeks after. So the post-production process must have been literally about 5 or 6 weeks in order for them to get that on the screen. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Testament to the fact that there were very few effects scenes in it, apart from the DeLorean stuff.
Yeah, and little known fact, in the original script, they were supposed to do it. The time machine was supposed to be a refrigerator.
Is that what it was?
It's supposed to be. They're like,
so you got to get into a fridge. What? And sling it down the road at 88 miles an hour.
Hit the ice machine? I don't know. Yeah. And Einstein, you know, who everyone knows, he doesn't have many scenes in it, but we all know the lovable Einstein, was supposed to be a chimpanzee.
Okay.
Could you imagine him? I would see him, you know, when the Libyan terrorists were coming after Doc, you know, the chimp's in the driver's seat smoking, and he's loading the gun. Right turn, Einstein. Yeah. Ralph, there was a lot of things that they did with this movie. Ralph Macchio was he turned down the role because, you know, everyone knew how popular The Karate Kid was.
Yeah,
but Michael J. Fox was popular in his own right. But other than that, I don't think we could say anything much about Back to the Future because there's all sorts of documentaries on it.
Yeah, there's a, you know, obviously there's a huge fan base for this film. But just watching the film for me is kind of a bit like watching Airplane, because there are certain little things that you notice that you never picked up on before. And one of my favorites is to do with the mall. So when the DeLorean shoots off, it knocks one of the pine trees down outside the mall. The mall's called Twin Pines Mall. And when Marty comes back at the end, the mall's been renamed Lone Piles? This is like a fucking
tongue twister.
Lone Pines Mall. Which I thought was pretty cool, because it's just one of those subtle little differences that no one ever really notices. But yeah, that's one of my favorites. But one thing as well that I found out today was that producer Bob Gale, he said that after the movie came out on October the 26th, 1985, a group of people showed up at the mall that was used to film the Twin Pines Mall location. To see if Marty would arrive in the DeLorean.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Did you imagine? Well, you never came. What's going on?
You mean the movie lied? We'll get to that movie in a minute. But yeah. I mean, with a 90% Rotten Tomato score, $19 million budget, but 381 at the box office. I say it was a very, very cool summer for Back to the Future.
What a pop culture hit this movie was, and also with the two sequels as well. I'm not sure what they've done collectively, but it must be close to a billion. It's incredible. It's a shame as well. I guess it's not a shame, whichever way you want to look at it. But because Zemeckis and Bob Gale own all the rights to everything, Zemeckis has maintained that no reboot or remake or anything would be authorized during his or Bob Gale's lifetime. So,
and I think one of the few trilogies that actually produce is with a sequel and the third one actually produce money rather than losing it as it goes along.
Big fan. It could be interesting to see some sort of remake. I know there was talk recently about Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. doing it. That I think would be really cool, and have them go back to the 80s rather than the 50s. I think that might be quite interesting, but we'll see. We'll see if that ever takes off.
So what's coming up next? What's released a week later?
So a week later, on July the 10th, we had two films. The first one was Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Mel Gibson.
You that good?
Tina Turner.
For those who took him, no mercy.
Together in the greatest Mad Max adventure of all. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Tina Turner looked sexy in this movie.
She did, I guess. Yeah.
She looked like she was the queen, you know, queen of this little outpost. And, who runs Butter Town? That's all I remember from that part. You know, the kid, the little guy who, cleans up the pig shit, or something like that.
Bruce Spence?
Yes.
I don't really like Beyond Thunderdome. I think it's just kind of, there's a really kind of tragic story behind it all. I don't know if you know about this
indulge me.
George Miller lost interest in making the film because his friend and producer, Byron Kennedy, was killed in a helicopter crash while he was on a location scout.
He was depressed, huh?
Yeah. So his heart just wasn't in it. And so he just did like some of the second unit stuff. And so a lot of the movie direction is credited to a guy called George Ogilvy. Mm-hmm. And the film's dedicated to the producer Byron Kennedy, but you can tell this doesn't feel like the normal George Miller Mad Max film. When you look at the stuff like Roadrunner and even the first Mad Max and the recent Fury Road, which I think is fantastic, it just doesn't feel, it's just kind of really sanitized, and it's kind of Mad Max out of the car for a lot of the time, which is what we kind of really like, all those big chases. But I guess the Thunderdome scenes are good with the chainsaws and all that kind of thing, but I just think it's a really, I mean, none of them have, apart from Fury Road, have been successes. They're all cult movies, and this one again wasn't particularly a success. The first two, I think, grossed, God, it wasn't much. It's not much more than like 15, 20 million or something combined. And this one on its own did 36 million on a 10 million budget. So, yeah, it's okay. I think it was just disappointing when it came out after Road Warrior, which is just fantastic.
Mel Gibson looks weird with that old lady long hair, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got this kind of like, I don't know, it looks like
extensions that were taped on his head.
Mullet or something down the back of his head.
I mean, you do have to admit the car chase scenes are pretty cool on the highway.
Yeah, they're okay.
Some of them was a horrific accident, one of them.
To be honest, it's so long since I saw it. I just remember being just disappointed with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because the chase scene, there's a part where the biker collides into like a truck or another car, and he flipped towards the camera. Well, they filmed that by accident, and the stuntman broke both of his legs doing it. And they're like, "We got it." it's like that wasn't supposed to happen. What the hell? But
pick him up.
Yeah, pick him up, dust him off. But to film in the desert, you know, where it gets hot one day, you know, it gets hot in the day, and then really cold at night. You know, and Mel Gibson only had 16 lines. of dialogue in that movie. 16 lines.
I remember a whole kind of conversation going on for quite some time about pig shit.
Yeah, but there's a positive note for this movie. You know, the Mad Max had an Australian cattle dog in this movie.
Hmm.
Do you know that dog was on the list to be euthanized in a couple days?
Oh, wow.
And then the scouts or producers or cast, a crew member, came in and saved him. And he became part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
So that was pretty nice,
yeah,
right?
I mean, positive, yeah, yeah.
And now that dog is like on every poster, you know, even if it's like just a black outline, and you see, you know, Mel Gibson walking with that dog next to him.
Yeah.
It's almost like the game Fallout for Xbox and PlayStation?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always
a
dog walking with somebody in a lone desert, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Always.
And that's kind of paying homage to this, is it?
I would think so. I would think so. The end of the world, you know. Look at I Am Legend. You know, Will Smith walking with his dog.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think it's an okay movie. It's okay. It's not. You know, like you said, Fury Road. That's an Oscar winner. Actually,
yeah, a terrific film. Absolutely terrific. And I'm looking forward to his Furiosa as well that he's in production with at the moment. So he better hurry up because he's getting close to the Richard Donner's age at the moment. It's old George Miller. But yeah, no, Furiosa is going to be great, I think. So yeah, so 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. The critics quite liked it. 10 million budget, 36 million at the box office. I guess it was cool.
Lukewarm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It has its fans. You know, it's not a movie that I own in my collection, but it's a movie that if it's on TV, you know, I'll, like we said, there's movies that we play in the background as we're doing stuff around the house just to keep it on.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, but we're going back. The next movie that released that same day, we're going back to even further into the desert, into the Wild West, and that's Silverado.
Silverado, where the West begins and adventure never ends.
I've seen Silverado, but it's an ensemble cast of stars and even future stars.
I'd seen this film when it first came out. I think I went to the cinema to see it. I'm pretty sure I did. It wasn't too much of a hit, not in this country anyway, but directed by Lawrence Kasdan. Kevin
Star Wars fan.
Yeah, the cast is incredible with Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, Kevin Costner, Danny Glover, John Cleese, Brian Dennehy. It's a brilliant 80s cast. And it just tells the story of four men who travel together to the city of Silverado. That basically sort of declare themselves law. It's a bit similar to Tombstone. They go there to try and clean up the town and bring peace and equality back to the city. What I like about this film is that right from the get-go, you're straight invested into the characters.
Yeah,
I think Kevin Kline's so watchable anyway. And this film kind of started a relationship with him and John Cleese, didn't it? Because they started three films together. Fish Called Wanda, which you and I absolutely adore.
Oh, gush over it.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic film. And hopefully we'll get to talk about that at some point. And also, what was the other one? Oh, Fierce Creatures, which was the kind of unofficial sequel to Fish Called Wanda, which wasn't that great, but still I kind of enjoyed it for
what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this is kind of reminds me quite a lot of Tombstone. Kevin Costner's so young in this, isn't he?
He's a goofball, kind of.
He doesn't even look like a film star in this, does he? He's, like you say, he's incredibly goofy in it.
When I first saw him, I thought of Warren from Something About Mary when he bought the kid's hat and guns.
Oh, yeah.
Cameron Diaz's brother. Bang, bang. You know, I thought
that was... He's a bit like that. But your favorite uncle's in there as well, Brian Dennehy.
I love Brian Dennehy.
Yeah, he was good. He was great. I tell you what films I like Brian Dennehy in is the FX films.
Yes, yeah. And he was good in To Catch a Killer.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a, I've forgotten about that.
Fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and but Kevin Costner and Scott Glenn, you know, they formed a relationship.
Yeah.
On this set, they were just like Scott recognized Kevin as being a future star, and he kept on calling him superstar and magic on the set because he thought, you know, he's a fantastic actor. Later on, became an Oscar winner.
That's right. That's right. But I also think Kevin Kline as well. Right from the moment he hits the screen, he's so charismatic. Mm-hmm. So charming throughout this film. But I guess that it was a huge budget and it's all on screen. It absolutely looks terrific. And the score is fantastic as well. I guess the world wasn't ready for a Western in 1985. No. Sorry, in 1985.
30, nominated. Nominated, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. $32 million at the global box office, $26 million budget. And 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. The summer was, I guess, a little cruel to Silverado. But Lawrence Kasdan got to do it again with Kevin Costner, with Wyatt Earp, I don't know, maybe 10 years later. Mm-hmm. The two, Tombstone and Wyatt Earp, which do you prefer?
Tombstone.
I think me too. I do like both films, but Tombstone's...
fun.
Tombstone. Yeah, Tombstone's a lot of fun, and I think the Val Kilmer performance is terrific with Doc.
Should have been Oscar nominated, and he should have won.
Should have been, but equally, Dennis Quaid as Doc Holliday is superb as well.
Yep.
But yeah, Silverado.
Yeah, you know, and the fans are still waiting for a sequel. It's never going to come. So sorry, fans.
It kind of alludes to it at the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It's I find it funny that when I saw this, John Cleese's first line in the movie is the first line what every cop says in Flying Circus. What's all this then?
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Well, what's all this then? I thought he was quite good as the sheriff. I thought he was.
I don't think every cop in England says that.
They say a warm evening, a warm evening.
Whatever. Over here, the cops say, "What the fuck you up to?"
Okay, so July 26th, our next movie. Two movies on July 26th. The first one, Amy Heckerling's National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Europe has survived many great disasters. Now comes the real test. Chevy Chase and his family are coming from America.
Look, bedpans.
Join Chevy Chase in National Lampoon's European Vacation, rated PG-13.
Darren, your favorite, isn't it?
I prefer this to the original. I don't know whether it's because a large part of it is actually set in and around the UK. It was, I think it was offered to Harold Ramis, wasn't it? But he was too busy with Ghostbusters, and so Amy Heckerling, who did Fast Times at Ridgemont High, directed this, and she fucking hated Chevy Chase throughout. She said he was awful.
It seems to be an ongoing thing, right?
In fact, she said she disliked Chevy Chase so much that she refused to step on set unless she had a plane ticket to New York City in her hand so that she could leave anytime she wanted.
Jesus Christ! What does that say? And she's holding that ticket and she's squeezing it because she wants to leave so quick. But, you know, I've learned so much, through our relationship and doing this show. And I ask you plenty of times, does that really happen? Are the hotels like that? And you can't get left and everything. You said it's absolutely true.
It is. Roundabouts, particularly in London, are a fucking nightmare. And they take the piss out of that in this film. The you can get some really ropey B&Bs. You know, the bed and breakfasts over here, it's particularly in London, and they're expensive as well. You can pay like, I don't know, maybe £100-150 a night for like a two star.
Like a New York, it's like a New York hotel, right? Awful. Fancy swig. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awful. And at that time, they joke, but at that time when this movie was made, and they're in the bed and breakfast, which is owned by a British comedian called Mel Smith. Mm-hmm. When they check in, calls him not Griswold, but Mr. Greaseball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Greaseball. I'll just tally up your bill for you.
They put the telly on in the bedroom, and Rusty makes a comment that, Dad, there's only four channels and no MTV. That's all we had back then. In the mid-80s, we had four channels. We only had three channels up until 1982. They're all showing the same thing.
Cheese making and snow.
Cheese making and snow.
And then I was like, I like the part where they first go in, and he's like, no, sorry, Gov. I'll have to go down the street and get some down to the Whitechapel. And he's got the Franklin translator. And Rusty says, Dad, he's speaking English. And he's like, do you have anyone that help with the bags? Oh, yeah, hold on. Mom, this old woman carry up all the luggage.
It was interesting because Chevy Chase said when he did the commentary for this film, he said that after the film was released, he got dozens of letters from people who had visited London and ended up trapped on a roundabout. What do you guys not understand about them?
No, we have some here in Jersey.
Really?
Yeah, but the smart ones learn how to get into the outside lane. But we don't have roundabouts that are two or three car wide. You can only go one car at a time. And usually you have the common courtesy of, if you go through, the car ahead of you can come in, and then that car can let it in.
You give way on roundabouts.
We give way. We help everybody.
It's not like that here. Once you've got a roundabout, there's no fucking stopping. You've got to go for it. You've got to pick your target and go.
Close your eyes and hope for the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The movie was a PG-13, which surprises me because it's quite raunchy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get to see German breasts.
Yeah.
Which is okay by me.
That was fine in a PG-13.
There's my answer.
Fine with you, eh?
Yes.
But no Cousin Eddie in this film as well.
Yeah, it's a disappointment. Could you imagine what kind of hijinks if Eddie and the family came along with him?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it would have been fun, but no, he came back in the Christmas Vacation one, didn't he?
Yeah, and the rest of them too.
Yeah. So box office wise, it was a hit. It wasn't a hit with the critics. 34% on Rotten Tomatoes, a $17 million budget, and $50 million at the box office. So it did okay.
Yeah, and it's in, and like you said, it's in the heart of us. You know, we actually, a lot of us love this movie. But also on that same day, we got another movie that is an all-time cult classic, and of course that's Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Warner Brothers is proud to present the story of a rebel.
I know you are, but what am I?
And his bike. Herman in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You will believe a man can ride a bike.
I meant to do that.
Rated PG. Now playing at a theater near you.
Tim Burton's first directorial movie, isn't it?
It is. It's fucking mental as well, isn't it?
It's on the border of adult. It is. X-ray glasses. He's going, ooh.
I have a question for you. Before this film, was Pee Wee Herman a thing?
Yeah. Pee Wee was a stand-up comedian, you know, of course, played by Paul Rubens. He did a show, Pee Wee's Playhouse, but it was supposed to be tongue-in-cheek adult theme. And it was a stand-up routine. He would do, putting mirrors on his shoes and looking up skirts. And he would he looked at one
set. What do they call that now? There's a word for it, isn't there?
Pervert.
We know he's that. No, there's a word for it. Upskirting. That's it.
Yeah. But he would do it to check the underwear out and just laugh until he got to one girl and she would say, "I'm not wearing underwear." And he would go, "Ugh." And he'd do it right off. But now, you know, Pee Wee's Playhouse, which became a pretty big 80s show for kids, you know, they realized that I guess the money is in kid shows rather than staying adult.
Yeah,
I adore this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you what, I read the second one wasn't too good, but the one that Netflix did recently as well, I thought that was terrific.
Yeah.
It's really good. Obviously, there's some amazing. I mean, the opening scene in this film is just terrific when he's waking up. The fact that when he goes out on his bike and he locks his bike up so well with so many fucking chains that you can't even see the bike and it gets stolen. I think it's terrific. But the whole Large Marge thing as well.
Oh, yeah.
When she tells that story, she never blinks once. And it goes on for ages, doesn't it?
Sounded like a dump truck going off the Empire State Building. And you see him, he's going.
Funny film, a really funny film.
Oh, Tim Burton did a good job, and Paul Rubens fought to get Tim Burton. I like it how he has all these different adventures with all these different people he meets. You know, like he meets the guy who broke out of prison, and they asked him, "What did you do?" And he looks at him and he thinks he's gonna say he murdered somebody. No, he went to jail for cutting the tags off a mattress. And Pee-wee's like, "Oh my god!"
it was a huge hit with critics. 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. Only a $6 million budget. And remember, we're kind of progressing through the '80s now, so budgets are kind of getting, you know, bigger. And for a big studio picture, a Warner Brothers picture, only $6 million is pretty cool with a return of $41 million. So it was a decent hit. It was a decent hit and a kind of, you know, iconic character now. It's interesting. I thought he was created exactly, you know, for this movie. I didn't realize he was he had a career before that. Okay, so August the 2nd, one of Frank's favorites. That's Tom Holland's Fright Night.
What would you do if you accidentally discovered the house next door was occupied by something not human? Something horrifying. Something unspeakably evil. No one believes you.
Mom, I didn't have a nightmare.
Not your mom.
They did kill a girl over there.
Not your girlfriend.
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back?
Not even the police.
Look, I know it's crazy. I know that, but look, Lieutenant!
It knows that you know. You'll do anything to protect yourself. But it will do anything to protect its secret. Love being scared. This could be the night of your life.
Frank.
I adore to death Fright Night. I think it's one of the best vampire movies of all time. You heard it here.
I like the film. I'm probably not as big on it as you are. I love the whole, you know, Peter Vincent thing, and he was obviously
Ronnie did a fantastic job.
He did. Yeah, no, he's great. And I think I read it was originally written for Vincent Price, was it?
Mm-hmm. But they took both the two names, Peter Cushing and Vincent Price, and put them together as honor of those two horror icons.
Okay.
Oh, Tom Holland is not the actor who plays Spider-Man, by the way.
No. It's Tom Holland who directed Child's Play, right?
Correct, and wrote Psycho Part 2.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, for those who haven't seen it, it's about a teenager who discovers that his neighbor is a vampire, and so he turns to this kind of sort of late night television show host, who's this kind of actor who presents old horror movies. Is that mm-hmm. He goes to him for help in kind of dealing with this vampire. I haven't seen it for about 25 years or so. So I'm hoping that you can dish the dirt on this one, Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. The effects for Evil Ed are just fantastic. You know, because he got that burnt cross in his forehead from Peter's crucifix. I think Steven Johnson worked on this for effects, which worked out. Everyone thinks that, you know, Jerry Dandridge lives off blood, you know, himself, being a vampire. Well, no, you see him. Remember, he eats an apple. And he takes a big hunk out of it, and all that's left is practically the outside skin of it when he throws it at Charlie, when Charlie's watching him. That's because Chris Sarandon said the reason why he can live off fruit is because his character was part fruit bat. That's the ugliest fucking fruit bat I've ever fucking seen in my life.
Is that true? Is that
yes.
What, is he making a joke of that, or is that?
No. He said, you know, the reason why he took it, he didn't want to do this role because he didn't want to play a vampire bat and be perceived as that. He says, well, no, because, you know, he's part fruit bat because he can live off, you know, the fruits. And because that's all you see him eat is apples when he's not, you know, sucking blood.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have, you know, Amanda Beers, you know, who's from Married with Children. She plays Marcy.
And one anecdote as well that I remember from a few weeks ago that we talked about, I checked it out again today before we were doing this, and that is that the librarian ghost from the original librarian ghost from Ghostbusters was deemed too scary, and so they shoved it in a cabinet somewhere, and Columbia Pictures dusted it off and used it in this film towards the end. I think are you satisfied now? You know which vampire that is?
Yes, it's at the end where he's dying. And at the on the wall, and he starts blowing up. You know, because the sunlight was let in.
Yeah,
he turns into flames. I forgot who did said it, but one of our listeners or watchers pointed that out to us as well.
I think it was your neighbor.
I don't think
was it Kyle.
Neighbor. I don't think it was Kyle.
I think it was Kyle.
Who knows?
I was trying to ask him. He's at the window.
Yeah, he's in the back. Okay. Yeah, but I think it's a good movie. Great special effects. Of course, everyone, you have to agree, one of the best looking posters for a horror movie.
Yeah, it's a great poster, yeah.
It's fantastic. And
Is there not a lot of love for Fright Night 2?
It's there's a little bit of love for it, but of course the first one, you know, the second one's not Empire Strikes Back.
No.
you know. It still has,
I guess.
Yeah, it has Charlie in it, and it has, you know, Peter Vincent in it. Other than that, you know, I guess it lost its ways of being in just one place, you know, the house across the street, you know, kind of charm. But maybe people were just tired of seeing a sequel to a vampire movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I see that Fright Night was the most financially successful horror of 85. Mm-hmm. And the second highest grossing horror film of 1985, behind A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. So it did good. A $9 million budget, $25 million box office, and 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's quite respectable for a horror picture. Yeah, Fright Night, 1985.
Now we're going to talk about another classic that released on the same day. Opposite end of the spectrum is not a horror. It's more of a teenage comedy. And that is Weird Science.
What?
Making a girl. Actually making a girl.
This is Wyatt and Gary.
I give her Womdigious mammary glands.
Something's about to change their world. Something out of this world.
She's alive.
alive!
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
It's all in the name of science. Weird science.
If you want to be a party animal, you have to learn to live in the jungle.
Not us.
Not here.
No way.
She is turning their lives.
Trust me for once, will you?
What is going on?
Gary, I don't know.
I don't know.
Their minds. And their house. Upside down.
It's seriously affecting your sex life.
It's completely unnatural.
Do you realize it's snowing in my room?
Totally unbelievable.
What's going on?
And definitely weird.
Hey, dudes.
They went from zeros to heroes in one fantastic weekend.
That's so good.
Universal Pictures presents a John Hughes film, Weird Science.
It's purely sexual.
Are you a fan of Weird Science? Can you stand Weird Science?
I really like Weird Science.
Music, the theme song is fantastic, isn't it? It's great.
That's Danny Elfman's band, Oingo Boingo.
Yeah, yeah, one hit wonders.
Yeah. I love Weird Science. I think, I don't know, I guess I was the right age to be perving over this, I guess. Kelly LeBrock.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
Beautiful.
At the time. Anthony Michael Hall, Elon Mitchell Smith, Robert Downey Jr., Robert Rossler. Who else is in there? Vernon Wells playing exactly the same role as he did in Road Warrior. And also Michael Berryman pops up in there as well as one of the bikers.
Such a nice guy he is. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few of his interviews. He always comes across really well.
Educated man.
Yeah, yeah. But for those who haven't seen it, and you should see it, I think, two high school nerds use a computer program to literally create the perfect woman, but she turns their lives upside down. Yeah, they basically... put a Barbie doll on the table, wire it up to the electric, sit there with bras on their head, and input some data into a computer, and out pops Kelly LeBrock. Good fun. I like it. I think it's a cheeky teenage comedy. It doesn't go too far. It's not like Porky's, where people are running around sticking their knobs through doors and all that kind of thing. It is a fun, harmless coming of age movie.
Let's just say it goes too far behind the scenes, because don't forget, Robert Downey Jr. pooped in somebody's trailer.
There is. I know this anecdote, and those of you who haven't heard it, you can check it out on The Thing with Two Heads. Sean Clark did an interview with Robert Rossler about Robert Downey Jr. on the set of this film. And go to that episode of The Thing with Two Heads and listen to the anecdote, because it goes on for quite a while, but it's very good fun. Those two sound like they had a blast making this film.
He was a serial dumper, he told Playboy back in an interview in 1997.
But there's also Robert Rossler also tells a story about the scene where the rocket come up through the floor. It was such a complicated shot to set up, and the scene itself cost around $100,000 to shoot, so it's quite a large part of the budget. And so they only had one go at it, because obviously a lot of the set was going to be destroyed. And just as the cameras rolled, Anthony Michael Hall farted, and the whole crew and the cast were in fits of laughter, but the shot had already started, and the rocket had, and so it just totally ruined the shot. And so they had to kind of manipulate it by filming it in reverse and pulling it back down through the floor, and there was additional tweaks in post-production to sort it out, but totally ruined an expensive shot with his ass. That was fantastic.
So Kelly's character is named Lisa. They named it after the Apple computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Also, it's name of Jobs' daughter, Lisa.
Okay.
And did you know back then that computer cost nearly $10,000 in 83?
Wow.
I mean, I'm sorry, in 85.
Wow.
But did you like... You know who stole this movie? Is Bill Paxton.
Chet.
Oh, Chet. Well, he gets turned into a big pile of shit. Eating flies.
It's funny. The film, you know, and I've watched it. I even showed it to my nephew a few years ago, and he was having fun watching it. It's really harmless, and it's just stupid schoolboy smut throughout. And
yeah,
you know, I think it's like a 12A rating in the UK nowadays. There's no nudity in it or anything like that. There's just a lot of people joking about farts and sex and all that kind of stuff. But great fun. And, you know, she went on to have like a kind of okay career after this. I think she did The Woman in Red, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And then went off and fucked it all up by marrying Steven Seagal.
That's for my wife. Fuck you and die.
But she's still around. She's still around.
Yeah, and she's still beautiful. You know, yeah. She's still got that nice angelic face.
And
you know, this is probably her best known role. Nothing else to say about it because there's plenty of documentaries about it as well.
So it was 57% on Rotten Tomatoes, which, okay, not too bad, I guess. It was all right. 7.5 million budget, 100,000 of that on that ruined take with the fart. And 39 million at the box office. So that was pretty cool.
Those people in editing don't get enough credit, do they?
I'd love to see that outtake.
What are you doing here?
Jerry was just taking a shit.
No, I
didn't. Oh, well. All right. So we got a couple days later after this, actually, you know, 2 weeks later. On August 16th, a movie that both you and I have covered on this channel, and we talked about to death, but we love it just the same, and that's Return of the Living Dead.
From the grave and ready to party. The Return of the Living Dead
starts Friday, August 16th at a theater near you. Check your local.
Darren, is there any more we can talk about this movie besides it being not only terrific story but being so funny?
I think we can gush about it a little more, I guess.
Okay,
I love this film and
be a man, Darren.
It's not a bad question, Frank. I love this film, and I've bought it numerous times. I've bought VHSs, I've bought laser discs, I've bought Blu-rays and DVDs and digital downloads. And you know, it's such a neat little package of around about 84 minutes or something like that. Right from the get-go, it's just hilarious, with some great horror moments as well. A superb cast. Everybody that's involved in this is just great fun throughout. Clu Gulager, just superb in it. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Clu Gulager. We just call him Clu.
Clu. There's very few horrors that can nail that kind of the comedy side of things as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, American Werewolf is one of them. Return of the Living Dead is another one. It's terrific. One minute you're laughing, the next minute you're jumping out of your skin. Great mixture.
Send more cops.
Yeah. And paramedics.
Yeah, and paramedics. But we have a somber note, though. We have to, you know, pay our last respects to Trash's pubes.
Yeah.
Shave them.
On that prosthetic or whatever they made.
So we remember that little anecdote I was telling you about when we did this the first time. Miguel Nunez said he was turned on by it because he saw everything of Quigley's lower half, everything. And then they put the prosthetic on, and he was just like, what'd you say? It wasn't anatomically correct.
No, it was we just looked like a Barbie doll or something, didn't
it? Yeah, he was just like, huh? As she was dancing, because his first reaction was, yeah, because that was the first time he saw it. And then afterwards, when she was dancing, everyone was just like, what the hell did they do?
It's all smooth.
Yeah, it's nothing there. You know, but yeah, Return of the Living Dead, you know, it did fairly well. It did pretty good.
It did okay. I mean, $4 million budget, which is, you know, decent back then. 91% on Rotten Tomatoes and $14 million at the box office, but a huge life afterwards. Do you know what I mean? Yes. The cult status of this movie. And that's why I've been ripped off with so many different versions, because it's a popular title and people are obsessed with buying things to do with it.
So next we have, the week after, we have another Michael J. Fox classic, and that's Teen Wolf.
Do you know anything about a rash that's going around?
From Michael J. Fox,
whoa!
Just say the word and see the moon.
Don't change. Don't change.
And you're into one scary situation.
You are an animal.
Has America's hottest hunk gone hairy? Let's check his family ties.
An explanation is probably long overdue.
Folks, this one's a real howl. Michael J. Fox is Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf, Monday night at 8 on KPTV 12.
Now, we all know about Teen Wolf, but let's put this thing to rest right now. At the end, when the credits are about to roll, is that a penis out of that man's pants?
An explanation is probably long overdue.
Well, it looks like somebody's jumping up and down in the background with their knob out, doesn't it?
which has been edited through to death now.
That's exactly what it looks like. And people have argued about this for years. There is a person...
More than the movie itself.
...jumping up and down with their pants open. And reading about it today, there's people that say it absolutely is, and there are people that say it absolutely isn't. When I look at this clip or watch the film, which I don't do often because I think the film is awful, that's what I see.
You do! You think...
Let's have a look. It's there, right?
Yes. Something's there. It's not a finger, and it's not a woman either.
Yeah. This film's awful, isn't it? I mean, the budget on this film was $1.2 million. The production took 21 days. It's something that Michael J. Fox is totally embarrassed about. And he even said, because he refused to return for the sequel, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. The sequel's awful.
Yeah, in an interview at the time while filming Back to the Future, he said, Steven Spielberg's down the street making great movies, and I'm playing a werewolf. Now, there's nothing wrong with that if the werewolf film's good, and this one isn't at all. But for some reason, and they think it's all to do with his star, isn't it? This came out after Back to the Future, directed by Rod Daniel, who also did K-9. So that tells you everything you need
to know.
Better
movie.
Yeah. And people just jumped on the Michael J. Fox bandwagon because of Family Ties and Back to the Future, and it did $80 million at the box office, which is
just a cult hit, though. It's a cult hit, which also spawned a cartoon in the 80s, and then later on, Teen Wolf, the TV series on MTV.
I don't get it.
Which became a little darker, though. So I think that when he changed for the first time, we see it. The makeup effects is good, but it's not also the first teenage werewolf story. We've had that way before in the 50s, saying I was a teenage werewolf.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as he hit puberty, he changed. At that moment, he got fur on his balls.
Where are we going with this?
Because everyone wonders why, you know, he hasn't changed up until that point.
Why is it? Why does he change? He's not bitten by anything, is he?
No. Remember his dad said it's gone through the generational process.
Yeah, his dad has the same problem as well.
Yeah, and he would hope that it would skip his son, but it didn't. So at the first full moon, you know, and probably his first boner, you know, the wolf came out. But that makeup is great because you see the changing, you see the hair get longer, the ears get bigger. But you know what? It just looks like a man who hasn't shaved. He looked like a roadie from Motley Crue. With some teeth.
He just looked like one of the background monkeys in Planet of the Apes or something.
Which was used on a different set, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't know what the... I just wonder whether people were duped back then and it was so successful, but no one actually liked it. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 42%. The budget, as I said before, was 1.2 million, and it did 80 million. It's. I just don't get it. Does anybody watch Teen Wolf now?
Yes, we still do. Yep.
Is it, apart from the bit at the end, is it like... Is it highly regarded? I don't know anybody who's...
We wait to the end to see the penis.
That's it. Yeah, maybe that's why 80 million box office was gained, because people wanted to go and find out for themselves.
I you know what it is? It's because they did the promotional so good, because what they did is they showed Michael J. Fox as the way he looks, you know, without any makeup. But then you see him opening his shirt, it says Teen Wolf, with his hands are hairy with claws.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they showed him with all the makeup on, they'd probably be like, what the fuck is that? It's a Sasquatch. Because the prosthetics were okay. But all they did, looks like they did, they just glued some hair underneath his on his cheekbones, dragged it down, and then put some hair, in, I mean, some prosthetic ears and some teeth in them, and that's it.
Yeah,
it's certainly not Rick Baker makeup, is it?
No way. No way. Yeah, so August 23rd, 1985, Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf holds a special place in some people's hearts, and I could see why. But you know what? It's okay. It's fun. But it's not as good as the next movie coming up a week later.
August 30, 1985, directed by Sam Furstenberg, Polish director. American Ninja.
He is the only soldier.
Who is he?
Who is capable of defeating the secret Black Star Army. A soldier who has become a master ninja.
Your destiny, my son, awaits you.
The deadliest art of the Orient is now in the hands of an American. American Ninja.
Starts Friday, September 20th. Consult your local listing.
Yeah.
Michael Dudikoff, who we'd only really seen in Bachelor Party, I think, as one of Tom Hanks's stags. Cannon, the guys at Cannon, Menachem and Yoram, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Saw Michael Dudikoff during one of their auditions. I don't know what film it was for. And just said, get that Dudikoff kid. They thought he looked like
Dudikoff kid.
Get that Dudikoff kid, because they thought he looked like James Dean. They cast him to play the American Ninja, and he didn't even know any martial arts.
But it's gone on to spawn sequels too.
There's five of these fucking things, and he's in. I think he's in three or at least three of them. But it started a huge relationship with him and Cannon. I think that he ended up doing like maybe half a dozen films with them. He trained in pre-production and ended up earning a black belt.
I think every time you say Cannon, I'm gonna have to do a salute. Because they're not here anymore.
No, yeah, I guess, but that's a good thing. Yeah, and he also it's shit. And do you know what the Rotten Tomatoes score is? Go on, Frank, read it out. That's fantastic.
Oh my god! I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have to read it out because there is no fucking score.
0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, everybody hated this film,
but it's because of why it's ridiculous. There's movies that are bad, and there's movies that are bad that are good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this, seeing the sky.
Bad movie.
I mean, this ain't Karate Kid, ladies and gentlemen. Let's put that. Ooh,
this is a fucking terrible film.
This ain't Three Ninjas. This ain't Red Sonja. I mean, this is. I think I'd rather watch a bunch of people take Taekwondo classes. You know, that'd be creepy. Forget that. I'm not watching that. staring in there.
Yeah, we should just move on, because I wanted to put it on here because of the legacy that it has of all these films. And I know it was popular back in the 80s. I know, you know, all my friends, have you seen American Ninja? Oh, it's great fun. Even the second one, that's brilliant. And it had that guy that always popped up in the 80s sort of martial arts films called Steve James, who was also in the Delta Force, which you and I finally talked about a few months ago. And yeah, the two of them kicking ass throughout this film. Michael Dudikoff apparently had sweat his way through the whole production because he was suffering from malaria.
off. The
canon guys were just like, no, carry on, carry on.
No, but it's you were right to go back a little bit. Nobody knew how to fucking kick or punch. No. So it's like canon having a Western, and no one knew what the fuck a horse was.
They greenlit films without scripts. They were amazing. If you watch that, I think it's called Electric Boogaloo, the wild and crazy world of canon films or something. Some amazing stories on that about their productions.
This movie belongs in a box set with Samurai Cop.
I think that wasn't he in that as well?
I think so.
I think he was. Anyway, that's it for American Ninja. We're talking too much
about you guys. Can watch the shit out of it. Go ahead.
There's going to be people slagging us off for not liking American Ninja.
Good. Whatever. It's,
anyway, I this next film, I hate to end 1985 on this film.
Starting off so strongly.
We did start off so strongly, but on August the 30th, the same day as American Ninja.
Another blockbuster.
Another blockbuster in the form of Paul Verhoeven's Flesh and Blood.
Thank you, little Scar. Agnes! If St. Martin points that way, we go that way!
Frank, have you seen this film?
Oh, bits and pieces of it. And I said to myself, why, Paul? Why? Now, you got a great cast. You know, you got Rucker in there, and then you got Paul directing. And you say, how could you... The guy who did RoboCop, the guy who did Total Recall, you know, and Starship Troopers and others, you're just like, how did he do this? And where was... apparently, you know, Rucker and Paul did not get along on the set.
No, they'd made 5 movies before, I think, all in old Dutch movies. And this was Verhoeven's first Hollywood movie. I like the synopsis on IMDb. In medieval Europe, a young girl from a noble family is obsessed with her captors. Commoners.
The poor.
it's a horrible film. I don't know why the Rotten Tomatoes score is 86%. I mean, I don't know what to say. I was quite shocked watching it. It's Jennifer Jason Leigh, as we said, plays a young girl from a noble family, and she's basically kidnapped by these commoners, as it says. Mm-hmm. They take her away and brutally rape her in quite a few times, which is just horrible. And she starts suffering, but she ends up with like a Stockholm syndrome and ends up kind of falling for them. And then you've got these kind of scenes of, you know, repeated attempts to try and claim it back by the noble folks.
Let them eat cake.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, wait for it.
Like you said, Rutger Hauer and Paul Verhoeven were just arguing all the time throughout throughout the production. Everybody is so fucking dislikable in this film. Even Jennifer Jason Leigh. You just don't know who to root for at all, because the noble people are horrible, and so are the commoners. Paul Verhoeven wanted to make a film because he was fed up of seeing overly sort of romanticized Middle Ages pictures. And he wanted to show a sort of a period where sort of brutality, disease, poverty, and hardship were a common and natural sort of thing. And a natural death was a rare thing. Mm-hmm. And there are no natural deaths. If people aren't decapitated or stabbed or burnt or axed in the face or raped, Or the only other way out of that is to catch the plague.
What you just read is basically an adult version of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
It is.
Because that movie has everything in it too. The same thing.
Yeah,
bring out your dead.
It's a horrible film. I know people have talked quite fondly about it over the years. Oh, have you seen? It is nasty and it feels really today. Like, but I was watching it and like Zoe was wandering past the lounge. She's like, "What the hell are you watching?" I was a little embarrassed watching it because some of the sequences in there really do not sit right today at all. There's one particular sequence which there's a bit where there's some poor girl's kind of clothes are getting ripped off and she's lying on the floor. They're pulling all her clothes off. And at the same time, a young kid is stealing her earrings. And he runs off with the earring, goes to his mum. "Oh, I got this earring." And she goes, "Go get the other one then." And he returns to this poor woman who's being assaulted on the floor to get the second earring. And it's this small ginger kid. Now, you won't know who this person is, but some of our British listeners will know when I say Max Branning from EastEnders, who's a kind of a soap opera actor here. It's him playing this young ginger-haired kid. And I wanted to double-check this, and I went online, and I found a tweet where somebody said, "Oh, just noticed Max Branning in The Fantastic Flesh and Blood by Paul Verhoeven."
Fantastic!
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And Max Branning, the actor, I can't remember his name now, wrote back and said, "It was such a privilege to work on that film." I'm not surprised. A 12-year-old boy running around with naked women all over the shop.
You want to be known as the kid who's stealing from a girl who's getting assaulted on the floor, for Christ's sake?
Yeah, it's horrible. Horrible film. Horrible film. 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, I don't know why, no idea. 6.5 million budget for a European film. I think you had Hollywood backing, but that's a lot of money back in 1985. Box office of 100K.
What does that say?
There is nothing fun about this film whatsoever. There really isn't.
No.
But anyway, that's the last film of 1985. It's taken us a while to get through, almost 3 hours to get through the 22 films I think we've spoken about.
We're always ending on shit.
We always are ending on shit. but 86 is a good year. Now, I've highlighted a few of the movies that we may be going to talk about next time. Things like Top Gun, Cobra, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Karate Kid 2, Big Trouble in Little China, Psycho 3, Aliens, Maximum Overdrive, Friday the 13th Part 6, Stand By Me, Manhunter, Night of the Creeps, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. A lot of horror in 1986.
Yes. Yep, a lot of stuff we both seen, and a lot of movies that we adore.
Yeah, yeah. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Don't forget to check out our Bugs episode that went out earlier this week. Frank and I had a lot of fun putting that together, and that's available now on YouTube. Also, we have a Facebook group, Slaughtered Lamb Movie Podcast Facebook group. You can come and join that group and interact with all the other guys. I don't know, there's well over 100 people on there now chatting away and talking about the podcast, talking about movies in general, all that kind of stuff. And also, we have an email address if you want to reach out to us. It's tslmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Frank, all anything right. to add?
Nope. We're getting getting close to the end here, and that means the summer's going to be almost over. But other than that, stick to the roads.
And the best of luck.
Om.